and welcome to another episode of All Tomorrow's Festivals, the content series exploring the signals from Edinburgh in August to explore the future of the arts, entertainment and culture. I'm Nick Sherrard. I'm MD at Label Sessions the rest of the time and also a slightly reluctant futurist. I'm also joined by our content producer and the interviewer for this particular episode, Josh Nixon. Josh, hello.
Hi.
So it makes a lot of sense that you were doing the interview because as an audio producer, a lot of the time at Label Sessions, this is an audio only show. The show's called Whisper Walk. I guess it's not audio only because you are actually exploring the city as you go. If you're buying tickets, you can buy it through the Fringe and you buy it through the Assembly George Square Studios, or as well as technically it's around that area. And it looks on the websites like it's sort of booked in hourly sort of slots, but this is a audio show and essentially an audio guide, right, Josh?
Yeah. So it's really unique for the Fringe actually, because it's not technically a theatre show. It's out and you can do it whenever you want. So you could go and do it at midnight if you wanted to, where it's you buy your ticket, you download an app, what is essentially an app there, and then there's 13 different landmarks and 13 different stories that are attached to those landmarks, and you work your way around them. And it's really unique in that sense, obviously, because, you know, not just because it's not tied to a physical place or one in particular, but also in how the, you know, one of the creators, Alexandra Silber, came to be with it. So it originally came from the Adelaide Festival, Adelaide Fringe last year. And there, obviously, you know, Australia is a lot much grander place, so it's like, you know, it would take a lot longer and there's less emphasis on walking. But when bringing it to here, so she has good ties to Scotland, being taught at the Royal Conservatoire, and is obviously an accomplished theatre actor on their own terms, but just was really enchanted by, obviously, Edinburgh as a city, but, you know, the sort of some of the Scottish poetry that comes with it. So there's 13 different poems with 13 different stories to 13 different landmarks. And like I say, you can work your way through the tales of the town.
I'm just pausing there just to reflect that the Australian Tourist Board must have really got to you, Josh. You were saying that Australia's a grander place than Edinburgh. This is like,
well, by grander, I mean, like, obviously it's, you know, from it's apples and it's apples and oranges from here to America. Yeah, it's lot less walkable.
Yeah, that's very much true. Definitely less walkable. Good. Let's head in and we will say a few words at the end.
Alexandra, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today. I'd love for you just to with a little bit about, you know, what can audiences expect from Whisper Walk this year?
So Whisper Walk is a completely unique experience that really sort of asks the question, what are our memories that are connected to very, very specific places? And it creates this unique storytelling experience that lives somewhere between a walking tour and radio drama.
Yeah.
And what's really unique about it is there is a single audience member, which is you. And your engagement with the piece exists with actors speaking, sort of whispering, if you will, directly in your ear, telling you a story about the exact place where you are standing. So it's very much you are there theater. And one of the things that I love about this piece and I love about the theater company that is producing it, Dutch Kills, is it's constantly asking the question, is it still theater if?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, often like, is it still theater if it's not in a theatrical space? Is it still theater if there's only one audience member? Is it still theater if there's no live actors? And I think these are questions that have been asked over and over again. We, you know, the United Kingdom has a rich history of radio drama. Mm-hmm. And never seems to challenge that relationship to receiving stories. But podcasting is a very, very new, incredibly rich form of communicating with audiences. Look at us now. But I don't think that we're necessarily as used to receiving dramatic, cathartic stories in that way. And so I think what's going to happen, which will be really special, is we've created a beautiful walk that's about 60 minutes long in terms of listening to the stories and including the walk itself. And 13 beautiful stories, that exist in these very specific places. And I tried to create truth-like experiences that are still fictional, told by some unbelievable British actors, and really celebrating not only the theatrical tradition, but Edinburgh itself.
The thing that I immediately have to ask, jumping off that, is how is it that you decided on the stories that you tell from the landmarks or the places that you found?
It's a great question. You know, you're the first person to actually ask me that question, so it's a real thrill to answer it. But, you know, it is, it's sort of chicken and egg, of course, right? I went to drama school uni in Glasgow, and so I have that was 20 years ago this spring. But I have a really rich history with coming to visit Edinburgh, bringing friends and family to Edinburgh, festivals of the past. And so I began with my own memories and then did a collection of memories from a lot of other people that have similar relationships to this place. And that was inspiring. But I think additionally, it's also about, sometimes I will use a story from my own life or a story that I've heard. And it's the essence of a story that I think might suit a specific place. So sometimes the place itself has really inspired a specific story. And other times, a story that comes to me, I realize belongs in a certain place. And there's very rare instances in which they sort of come together perfectly in both instances. But this one is very, very special because I would say that every single story, with the exception of just a few, are stories that memories that really belong to me or belong to people immediately tangential to me or to our team. And so people are going to be hearing some really lifelike memories. And yeah, I think that's part of the creative process. I try to view myself as a bit of a listener to the, if you will, to the voice of the muse. I know that sounds a little woo, but you know, I think sometimes we, you know, once upon a time, you know, nowadays we call people a genius, right? But once upon a time, a writer or an artist possessed a genie, and the genie spoke to them, whispering from the gods or the universe or whatever. And I think I identify with that latter image a lot more. Sometimes I just go, I don't really know where this one came from, but I'm just listening and writing down the stories that I'm being told. So definitely a couple of those in Whisperwalk, Edinburgh.
that sounds fantastic. And, you know, I've always myself been really fascinated with how memories are always inherently tied to a place.
Totally. Do you have any yourself? Do you have any yourself where you're just like, oh my goodness, this bench or this train station or that door? I'm sure you do, right?
Yeah. I think everyone does.
Like, I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be in the most rural spaces. It can be in the cities. It could be anywhere. And that's why I was wanting to ask you too, a little bit around, we're talking about this before, around the logistics. It's like, I know Edinburgh is a place you can get lost in for hours. It must be such a challenge to cram that into the traditional sort of theatre time of an hour.
Yeah. So I actually, the only other time that we have done a piece, it was a version of Whisperwalk, but completely different stories. We did at the Adelaide Fringe Festival in Australia, in South Australia. And that piece, first of all, I think the concept of Australian space and time is a very different concept than Scottish space and time. What's considered far and what's considered long are very different things. Mm-hmm. So the Adelaide experience was a little bit longer and a little bit more meandering. We really knew, we were like, this has to be an hour. We want to make sure that it's a very concise experience. So actually that is what my collaborator Asa Wimber and I have been doing the last couple of days, is walking it, making sure all the stories are nice and tight, making sure the paths are as efficient as possible. Yeah. And making sure also that the walking experience doesn't drop theatrically, that we still have a nice suspension. So we've added some like really beautiful ambient music to walk to while you're getting your directions, so that there is a cohesive experience.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you're absolutely spot on. It's the difference in scale, and it must have been really interesting to do in a different country first before coming here, because you know, the joke always goes of, you know, Americans drive 12 hours for a day trip, but you, that 12 hours in the UK is like you basically made it from the top to the very bottom.
Exactly. Remember, I actually remember when, the first time I even I experienced it differently in 2009. I spent the summer in Russia, mm-hmm. and talk about an even vaster experience of scale. They're like, yeah, just a quick 15-hour trip, and I was like, 15-hour trip, you know, like you might as well go to the North Pole, you know. Anyway, but it was. I think that everybody has a slightly different experience of that, but also wanting to make sure that the experience feels concentrated, right? You don't want it to water itself out too much. You don't want there to be too much time between the stories. You don't want there to be a suspension. And I think that's something that we learned last time as well, that you really want to create and totally submerge the audience, listener, whisper receiver in the experience as fully as you can for the whole hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that sounds fab. And like, I'm really sorry to peel into the technical sort of things more because some stories, but that it just fascinates me. It's like, so when it comes to the actual mechanics of being part of the walk, is it like an app that you download on your phone, or is it like tune into kind of thing?
It's so cool. It's so, I'm glad you're asking about the mechanics because I think it's so incredibly brilliant. Yeah. So my collaborator who came up with the concept of this idea, Asa Wember, he not only birthed the basically storytelling via walking is his concept, and he invited me to create the dramatic stories to put onto it. In Adelaide, we did three stories, two of which were narratives and one of which was whisper walk.
Oh, nice.
And in terms of the technical elements of it, yes, it's very much like an app. So you purchase a ticket. When you purchase the ticket, you click a link and it takes you to not a downloadable app the way that we think of them on our smartphones nowadays, but to a website that does look very much like an app. So it's a, you know, it's a portal, and you begin the experience. So you basically, it's very much like, I don't know if you've ever done this. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have, where you go, you're like, I'm in Buenos Aires, right? And I want to go to the Plaza de Mayo and learn all about the history. And you like stand in front of Casa Rosada and you press play. And it's like, in 1852, blah, 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 blah. So it's very much like that. But instead of hearing in 1852, you're standing in front of what's a seemingly very ordinary bike shop, or in the Deaconess Gardens, in this little hidden garden, or you're standing under a bridge and you go, what's special about this place? What piece of history could I possibly learn? And the sort of the little gotcha with a nice gotcha, wink in your eye gotcha, yeah. is you're not learning Edinburgh history, you're learning people's personal histories. Mm-hmm. And each story is this incredibly personal, confessional story, sometimes extremely comic and sometimes extremely poignant. And the effect, we hope, is that the person that is sharing the story, it almost feels like you are a stranger that just happens to be receiving a very personal stranger from the stranger standing next to you. I know I have, I'm sure you have too. I'm sure your listeners have. I've been on trains or on buses or on airplanes where suddenly I'm telling the person in the seat next to me things I wouldn't tell some of my closest friends, just because you're in an unusual situation and you're particularly vulnerable. And I think what it does is it plays with this concept of intimacy. And of course, not only intimacy, but proximity, right? That even if you were sitting in a theater on stage watching somebody bare their soul, they're still between 20 and 60 feet away from you. Mm-hmm. This is such a unique experience of having someone quite literally in the closest part of your intimacy, right in your ear. And we wanted to see if that had an effect. So ostensibly it operates technically a lot like a walking tour. When you're done with a story, you press a button. It gives you directions to the next space with a nice Google Maps so you don't get lost. A nice photo that says, if you're standing in this spot, you're in the right spot. And when you're ready, press play and the next story begins. And so that's basically how it functions. It's pretty, I think it's pretty intuitive. And there'll be lots of laughter and I think some tears too. So I think people, there's a lot to connect with, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. It's brilliant. And like, you know, all the emotion came into the sort of technical side of it too. But, you know, you were talking you know, it's clear in your passion for the show about why, but and obviously your sort of personal history with the place, being taught Royal Conservatoire and being hot to Scotland too. But I'd love for you to tell me a little bit more about why now and why specifically the Fringe, you know?
I feel very passionate about Scotland as a center of arts and culture, not just in the UK and not just in the Western world, but across the globe. I serve on the International Advisory Board at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland, and I say this all the time. I say, I don't necessarily know, but I think it's also because Scotland is not a bragging culture. So they're sometimes quite overly humble about their significance, but I can say it, that I really believe that what Paris was to art and culture in the 19th century, Scotland truly is to art and culture in the 21st. I include all the major cities, the Dundee Rep, the ballet, the orchestra, and of course, the largest fringe festival of arts and live performance on earth.
Yeah.
The infrastructure it takes to support this every single year is equivalent to that of preparing for the Olympics, which certain cities do once in a lifetime. And I think the thing that's so brilliant about it is all of these workers supporting and coming together to unify a city in the name of art and really changing the art form, pushing the edges of what's possible, asking questions about who we are, holding the mirror up to nature. Where else on earth is doing that at this scale?
Yeah.
And with this level of both total seriousness and such humor. What I love about Scotland as a character is how seriously it takes the work, but how unseriously it takes itself. And there's something about it that makes that feel like anything is possible. And so why here? My answer to that is, where else could we possibly be? This is where we want to share and start those stories.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's an incredible answer. And, you know, that's a really good segue into a little bit about more of the wider world when it comes to theatre and live performance. Like, obviously, you as a person and as an actor have been around the block for quite a while, and you've been under your belt. I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about, you know, what's exciting you in this realm right now.
Yeah. You know, I think that this is a very interesting piece because it's asking a couple questions I think sometimes really frighten live performers.
Yeah.
That has to do, you know, a lot of these questions I think we have about digital media, about AI, and ostensibly these questions about being replaced in terms of how we receive storytelling and media and all sorts of things. And of course, there is a part of me that feels the fear, the anxieties, asks all those questions. But I'm also curious to see what these new forms could provide as tools for different kinds of storytelling that might offer different ways of receiving story that are just as legitimate. I want to be very clear too that I do not think that the theater, the ballet, live music, I do not think that live performing art is replaceable in any way. I think that there is something innately human about gathering together and bearing witness. It's so crucial to who we are. It goes back to our earliest instincts as pack creatures. And before we had language, we had story. Before we had music, we had story. It's so innate to who we are. I think what would be a shame, though, is to shut our eyes and ears to possibility to maybe reach more people, different kinds of people. And one of the things I love about Whisper Walk, as an example, is there are people out there that don't do well sitting still for 3 hours, don't feel comfortable in such close proximity to others, can't stay awake past 7 p.m. or wish to experience things in solitude. I feel like it offers accessibility. It's incredibly cost effective. There's very, very little cost barrier to entering these spaces. And one of the things I've always felt about the West End and Broadway, as thrilling as they are, I sort of earlier spoke of the Olympics, you know, in many ways, they are the Olympics of Western theater. You have to literally get to a geographic place, which it costs money, and you have to pay a fee to walk through the door. That's not possible for everybody. But do those people that might be prohibitive to still deserve story? Absolutely. And so to me, this is a way to provide those things in new and interesting ways that might reach more people and different people. And I'm interested in exploring that, even if it is a colossal failure, even if it really upsets people. You know, there was a time when we all had to learn how to use a search engine, right? We all had to learn how to use the radio. We all had to go, wait, I don't exactly know how to ask Google to do something effectively to get the answer I'm seeking. And now it's second nature to us. It's an addendum to the portfolio of our knowledge. And I wonder if by accepting that some of these new forms of storytelling are here, if we can leverage them beautifully and add more beauty to the world. That's kind of the experiment I think I'm engaging in.
You know, that's incredible. And it's a wonderfully optimistic answer, because it's so easy to be cynical about these things.
Of course.
Technology, it's a constant state of like anticipation, anxiety, what's going to happen next rather than what we can do with it.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. I mean, and I will say, like, it's not that I don't feel those things or think those things. I just try to insert, okay, well, if this is happening, where is my agency and where can I contribute and where is my artistic autonomy still me? And how can I leverage these new circumstances and these new tools as tools rather than feeling like I'm welcoming our warlords? Do you know what I mean? I sort of am more curious about what's possible rather than what's no longer possible, if that makes sense.
You know, that makes complete sense. And, you know, we'll have to flip the question on its head then. And you might have already answered it a little bit in terms of what scares you, what's like a danger to the art form that you feel.
I think not only a danger to the art form, but I think a danger in general is human cynicism. And when humans lack curiosity and leave the part of their empathy and intelligence where they think they have no more exploring to do, question asking to do, learning to do. And I'll answer those in two segments, because it's sort of two answers. I think, first of all, cynicism is not pessimism.
Yeah.
Pessimism is bad things happen. I like to think of myself as a hopeful pessimist, as a person that goes, yes, bad things happen, but sometimes good things happen. And when bad things happen, what can I do to contribute? What can I do to make my local world a slightly better place, to make this person, I like to think about how I can contribute despite the burning world.
Yeah.
And cynicism, I think, though, is actually psychologically the result of truly idealistic people whose hearts are broken. And there is a spinal crack that truly debilitates cynics to not act positively at all. It breaks their capacity to hope and continue to contribute meaningfully. And I think, especially in this day and age, we socially, I'm speaking in like sort of the royal social we confuse cynicism with intelligence. It's almost like it's very, very smart and wise to be really cynical that nothing's ever going to work out. We obviously hear a lot of bad news, and the way that we receive news now means that the most outlandish, the most upsetting, the most horrific and emotionally reactive news reaches us so that it gets more clicks and we buy more things and we become more afraid. But there is good in the world, and it is happening, and we are still ourselves, and we are still capable of goodness. And I believe in that. And so I become afraid that cynicism will become fashionable.
Yeah.
And we will lose the desire to connect and the desire to meet people in a place that might be not ideally comfortable for us in order to connect with others. It's one of the reasons I think the arts are so important, is because it offers a low barrier to doing just that. And then the second thing, I think it's not dissimilar to this point, but I think we live in an age, again, particularly with the way media works now. For example, once upon a time, we, the humans, sought out the news, right? We were like, oh, look, a paper. And there were 8 papers to pick from, right?
Yeah.
And you might like choose your super biased paper, but you're still going to get it every morning, or it's showing up at your doorstep every morning. Now the news finds us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we become incredibly overwhelmed by it. And that is, you know, human beings are not meant to process information that way, let alone traumatic information that way.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that's starting to happen that I do think the arts and theater really serve is this particular problem. I think we are making a mistake socially that total certainty and not changing our mind means that we have the courage of our convictions, and it makes us seem more intelligent and more principled. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's statistics and science behind this. That's not actually true. That true intelligence, one of the signs of it is the capacity to change your mind when you have collected data to see things differently. And I really believe that storytelling initiates that more readily sometimes, particularly today, than facts sometimes do. Facts don't move people. Facts don't always change hearts. Stories do. And so I really do believe that while I fear cynicism, I fear inaction motivated by it, I fear people getting rigid in an attempt to appear principled, I also believe in us. I believe in us. And I think that our humanness will never be taken from us as long as we don't let it.
I've heard say facts don't change, as stories do, is one of the best sentences I've heard all day. That's fantastic. So,
I'm so glad. I really believe it.
Yeah, it's a great thing to believe in, and I completely agree. To turn things back to, you already give such a hopeful answer, but to continue the hopeful train.
Yeah.
And this is the final question is, you know, I know you're going to be really busy over the course of the Fringe, but I'd love for you to tell me if there's any other things that you're looking forward to this coming August.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I'm so overwhelmed by all the posters because, you know, you're walking around going like, I want to see everything. I have, in addition to Whisper Walk, Dutch Kills Theater is also producing a beautiful piece of immersive music, the music of Wet Hands. It's called Channel, and it's also happening via the Assembly. And it's not even really a concert. It's like an immersive piece of soundscaping music, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing that. And then just a couple of posters that have grabbed my attention. I am really interested in seeing, I have no skin in the game whatsoever, I'm really interested in seeing The Other Mozart. It just grabbed my attention. It looks like, it appears to be about Mozart's sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very, very, very much looking forward to this, all of the stand-up comedy, because I love to laugh, speaking of hope. So those are the pieces that I'm looking forward to, but I'm really hoping to be one of those people that sees like 2 or 3 things a day.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. Oh, and there's a Murder, She Wrote. There's a live solve along Murder, She Wrote happening.
Oh my God.
And I'm about the biggest Murder, She Wrote and Angela Lansbury fan there is. And I will be there. So I'm going to be that really annoying person there on Friday. So everybody doing the Murder, She Wrote solve along, that'll be me.
Okay, so that was Alexandra Silber. The show is Whisper Walk. The show, or the piece, is Whisper Walk. A really interesting interview around Josh. I was actually listening sort of in the room next door as you recorded that this time. And I also thought her kind of take on where Scotland is now culturally, and the power of what's going on in Scotland in terms of live performance, was also really, really kind of interesting alongside the story of Whisper Walk itself.
Yeah, and it was really great to learn a lot more about that in terms of the cultural impact, but also
I wanted to delve a little bit into the sort of technical stuff too. It was very fascinating to, because I was like trying to picture it in my mind as how it would necessarily work. So obviously with the app, like I was mentioning in the intro, but also like, you know, how do you wrangle people and get them from point A to point B to point C without any, you know, problems? And it was kind of fascinating how they worked it out.
Yeah, so lots of these themes are going to come together. So we're just about to get into the findings, so the way we kind of draw all of this kind of research project together, which will happen in the coming weeks. It's not giving away too much to say that there's some really interesting things around the role of sound in performance, but also around this kind of key idea of why is there not quite as much Scottish stuff in the festivals as you might think? So we will explore both of those themes. But
Yeah.
for just now, it's a really interesting one to end up on because it's quite hard to do the mechanics for, only because it's actually really simple, right? So if you want to experience Whisper Walk, you can buy yourself a ticket, you'll get the app, you can be able to explore in your own time, but you can buy it through all the normal, or buy access through all the normal fringe places. So it's in the theatre program. It's interesting, actually, one of the categories on the fringe website now is walk. So storytelling, theatre, and walk. But yeah, this is Whisper Walk. Yeah, you can get access through the fringe site. A really interesting experience. I'm looking forward. I'm going to try and do it over the weekend, actually, one of my thoughts. But we'll it's now festival time as we record this. But do have a look through. So there's another 19 odd artists and curators and producers who we've spoken to and shared the research conversations here. So we do have and explore some really fascinating conversations and thoughts. And you can also then hear how we draw it together and what kind of signals we kind of draw out from the noise around what we can learn about the future of the arts and entertainment and culture. So you can, if you listen to them all, then you can listen to the conclusions we find, and then you can disagree from a very informed standpoint. So so do have a listen. You can find out all about all tomorrow's festivals through labelsessions.com. All of our social handles will also be over the next few days, just posting lots about the different performers and artists that we've involved in this process too. But do give it a look. But for now, thanks for listening, and speak soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys.